If your vibe is the earlier the better, Lowe's early Black Friday deals are a no-brainer. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 11/4. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. LG member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to Med Crimes. You know, that intro really never gets old for me.
Doesn't get old for me either. I love pointing to you.
Like, it's just, it's soothing.
I think it just is like a, here we go. It's time to like get down and relax and do our thing, man.
You know what's fun? I still meet new people every now and again. Mm-hmm. Like, they get to know me with my job because I go to several different places. And so every now and again, somebody new learns about my show. And it's so funny. I said to someone, I was like, well, these two girls, it's my favorite podcast. And I just say, these two girls, they just shoot the shit in the basement and they just talk. They've been best friends forever. And it's just so fun. And one of the co-hosts might just be me. And she was like, what, really?
You know? That's how I should introduce the show.
I was like, I might just be one of those
Why
co-hosts.
Don't I do that? That's so funny. I should do that. Why don't I do that?
It might just be me.
It's probably me. Actually, it is me. It's me. Spoiler alert, it's me. It's a whole bunch of me.
And then they're like, that makes sense for you. You have a good podcast voice. And I was like, I do?
Yeah.
What?
Do I not tell you this?
It still amazes me.
No, you have like a very good broadcasting voice.
It still amazes me. Speaking of, did we get any feedback on what I asked for last week on my purchase?
Oh, yes.
We did.
Yep. Everybody says do it.
Oh.
Everybody says just get the Nintendo.
Well, guess what, people? This is hilarious. I said to my husband, I kind of came to the realization I wanted to wait one more year. I was like, you know, let's just wait one more year. And then he just kind of got, just, David, if you're listening, just a little defensive, just a little bit.
David wants the Nintendo.
And I said, oh, so really this is for you.
David.
This was not even ever an option that I thought I had to decide for my children. Really,
no.
This is for
this,
you.
This from the beginning was a thing that is happening this year.
Because the husband wants one.
There was never a decision to be made. This had been committed to previously. That's okay.
I love you, husband.
We have patrons!
Patrons!
Christina Chambers.
Hey, hey.
Woo!
Christina Chambers.
Lizzie S.
Hey, hey.
Oh, my goodness. And Sonji C.
I love that.
I know. I love all of these
Guess
people.
What you guys are.
My God.
BTW.
Devin came up with this because she should do this every week.
Again, we're trying to think of spooky ones being through the season. And then I was like, wait, how many do we have? 3? Boom. Guess what? You are the Sanderson sisters!
Sisters!
You're welcome.
I put a spell on you.
You can all decide between the three of you which one is Winifred.
Yes, please start a chat between the three of you and decide which one is
which. Don't fight over her.
No, don't fight. I mean, they're all iconic in their own way. All right. Thank you, three of you, Christina, Lizzie, and Sonji, for joining us.
Welcome to the family.
We so appreciate you. I've got a highly requested case, a big, fat, juicy two-potter, baby.
Big, fat, juicy.
It's big, it's fat, it's juicy. A lot of requests for this over the years. Actually, the past couple of weeks, they've even picked up. I don't know if they're, I don't really know why. But I just felt like it was time. It was a good time. We're going to talk about Dr. Anthony Pignataro, who was a American surgeon, quote unquote, who ended up practicing a little bit beyond his means and caused a lot more harm than good. And we will get into the details of it. This first episode, we're going to talk a lot about sort of his early days, his personal life a little bit, how he came to be, his childhood, where he went to school, and how his years of practice sort of began. And we'll get more heavily into his misdeeds over in part two. So we are just going to start this bad boy right off here. Anthony Pignataro was born May 12th, 1958 in West Seneca, which is a neighborhood out in Buffalo, New York. And Anthony really looked up to, in particular from an early age, his father, who was a surgeon. His name was Dr. Ralph Pignataro, and he was highly respected.
Ralphie.
Very, very respected guy, not only in his field, but just like in the community. Like everybody knew who this guy was. His patients trusted him very well. He was a general surgeon, so he did like, you know, a whole bunch
everything.
Of just general stuff, a little bit of everything. And Anthony looked up to not just like his dad's work, but how he was revered in the community and like his status. He really looked up to him for his status. Apparently, Ralph, you know, didn't have like the best relationship. He did cheat on his wife multiple times throughout their marriage, but he was a good dad by all reports. He was very present in his kids' lives. He took really good care of his wife and of the kids, at least financially, would nothing else. And reportedly, Ralph Pignataro really spoiled his kids. There were four kids total, and they had a huge house. They had all very expensive educations. All of the kids went to private school. Anthony was the oldest of the four, and he attended the Nichols School, which is a private high school. And their tuition is anywhere between $11,000 and $15,000 a year, or it was at the time when he was
in
school.
That's a lot.
That's a lot for back then.
That's, yeah.
100%. And it's not really reported whether or not he got awesome grades, but honestly, he didn't like really need them because his dad was like had such status in the community and he donated a lot of money to the school. So it kind of seemed like even if he wasn't doing that hot, he was going to be fine. You know what I mean? So 1976, an 18-year-old Anthony ended up heading to Lehigh University in Pennsylvania to pursue a major in math. He wasn't one that was like really committed and interested in his studies. Wanted to party. He wanted to have fun in school. He wanted to be able to live his life. He wanted all of like the perks and the status that came with being Ralph Pignataro's son and, you know, college kid in that time who was like fairly wealthy, came from a really good family and wanted to just like enjoy that part of his life. He was heavily into boxing also during his high school and college years. And he did really well. Like that is something in his young life that he really excelled at was boxing. That was like his big focus, his big sport. And he did it in college too. And he actually became a champion, like a ranked champion in his weight class. Like he was, he got some like real recognition for this. And it seemed to give him a lot of confidence also. He did very well with the ladies. A lot of it was because he wasn't a bad looking guy. But also super charismatic. He was cocky. Like, he had that attitude, like, of his upbringing, basically. You know, he was, was kind of fed that all of his life, and it totally reflected in the way he spoke of himself, the way he spoke to other people, all of his relationships. In 1978, Anthony had just finished his sophomore year, and he was sort of, like, out on the town when he spotted 20-year-old Debbie Rago in a parking lot. And the two had kind of like an interaction. He kind of like poked fun at her because she drove, you know, she did something in the car or whatever. He like made fun of her driving and kind of teased her a little bit. And Debbie was like kind of flirtatious back. And they kind of like sparked a little bit of a thing. And soon they realized that they actually had mutual acquaintances and they kind of ran in some of the same circles and they ran into each other a couple times when they were out on the town. So at the time, Anthony happened to be casually dating somebody that Debbie knew because they were all in the same circle, like unbeknownst to them.
Well, it's a small area up there,
small too. Small area. Yeah, that's very true. So Anthony ended up, when it was clear that he and Debbie had like a little bit of chemistry, he ended up dumping this other girl that Debbie knew and he started dating Debbie.
Sorry, other girl.
And over that summer, the romance kind of like bloomed into like a very serious relationship. The two were like sort of all about each other. They spent a ton of time together. And still, as Anthony started like completing his university studies, he made it clear to Debbie, like, I really want to like lock down my professional life a little bit before we start planning a future together. Like, I'm serious about you, but this might take some time, because he had decided that he wanted to go on to medical school and follow in his father's footsteps. Mm-hmm. So during his final year at Lehigh, he was 22 years old at the time, and he had made that decision that he wanted to become a doctor like his father. But it came with challenges, right? Because like all of the really prestigious medical schools that he was really hoping to get into, he just didn't have grades that were high enough to get him in. And these schools were and still are extremely competitive. Almost all of the United States schools are like that.
There's one out there that's an Ivy League. God, everybody out there, y'all out there are going to laugh that I can't remember it. But was it Cornell?
Maybe.
I think it's Cornell. And one of them has like the highest like suicide rate because of like how...
Specifically medical school?
I don't know. Like, if it's a med school.
Really? Oh, okay.
I think it is.
Cornell has a medical
program. I think they do. But anyway, because of how hard the program is. Like, it's just like the pressure and the,
Oh, how awful.
Yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Is it Cornell?
Because that's not what it's supposed to be.
Now everyone's like, they're not out there.
We could be wrong.
I heard this years ago.
Devin's a Googleizer.
I used to travel to that area. Ithaca, New York.
I know you did. Yes. Ithaca. Yeah, you're right.
Thank you. It is that one. Whoop. Yes, it's that one.
Wow.
It is that one.
That
so, yes,
really
I used to travel out there to visit friends, and my husband's from that area.
Right.
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's really good to know, but also really sad.
Is that where he went to school?
So no, he went to he went to Lehigh.
Okay.
But in Pennsylvania. But, I mean, I feel as though, and then, yeah, that was for undergrad anyway. He went to Lehigh in Pennsylvania. Mm. But he was trying to get into all these U.S. schools, and a lot of the prestigious ones he started with first. And he had taken the MCATs, which is the medical college admission testing, which is like your standardized test that you take in order to get you into medical school. And his scores were okay, but they were not competitive enough to get him into these schools.
Like a prestigious med
school. Yeah. And honestly, a lot of other medical schools. Like there were really not any in the U.S. that he would qualify for. Just
really,
I mean, and it's not that he was a real bad student. He got by, but like you can't, the general rule of thumb is like you really can't get into med school in the United States if you're
mediocre.
You just can't. These programs are so incredibly selective, mm-hmm. and they still are to this day. And there is a lot more of them
which
now.
Which I like.
I do like it too.
I like that for sure. I wish that our, this is another rabbit hole, I wish our insurance in this nation allowed us to access all those good doctors.
Yes.
You know?
Wouldn't that be nice? Like, if we could choose our healthcare providers and make that decision for ourselves with some autonomy over our bodies, would be nice. Maybe someday. So what he started to do was explore other options. So what a lot of students do if they're really hell-bent on getting into medical school and going to medical school and following that path and becoming a doctor, and they're not getting accepted into the U.S. medical schools, is they start looking at other places in maybe U.S. territories like Puerto Rico, places like Guam, places like, you know, more offshore schools. And that's what he ended up doing. He started around 1983. He had enrolled to pretty much the only place that he had found that would accept him, which was Universidad Central de Caribe in Puerto Rico. And if you haven't heard of it, it's because the school is not necessarily known for its prestige. And that is the truth for a lot of these offshore, less competitive schools. And there's a ton of people that turn to going to school in these places. First of all, their tuition is a lot more affordable. Second of all, again, their admissions criteria are a lot more lackadaisical. But the drawback is these places don't have great university hospitals to study at. They really don't have great residency programs or any residency programs.
You're going to kind of come out as a piss poor doctor. That's
the issue, right?
Yeah.
And they just don't have the resources to give a really good, thorough, comprehensive training. Now, I've personally not had any experiences with doctors that have received training in these like more offshore schools, like in the Caribbean and things like that. But from what I hear, in general, these doctors just, they just don't receive that same level of training. And I'm trying to say that in a non-biased way because it's not, I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to shit on these places.
Is there a doctor out there that's doing pretty good that came out of there?
I would love to know your story.
Speak up.
I want to know your story.
We always have some benefit of the doubt. We can presume, but we're just.
But we just don't know. Yeah,
are you
out
there?
I want to know. And there are a lot out there that are probably successful and they do just fine and have gotten into residency programs that have filled in the gaps and they've been able to move on and be wonderful doctors. I'm sure that does exist.
But in a large number, meh.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, and a lot of these programs too, yes, they're affordable. Yes, they have easier acceptance criteria, but a lot of them are not accredited by the United States accrediting bodies, mm-hmm. even though they're on U.S. territories. Mm-hmm. So that becomes an issue when you leave the school and come back to the States and seek a residency program. A lot of the residency programs will not even consider you mm-hmm. receiving training from a school that is not accredited, mm-hmm. unfortunately. So that Anthony kind of like looked at all this and he was like, I'm just going to overlook those concerns and throw caution to the wind.
So,
because what he really wanted to do at the end of the day was become a doctor. And this was really sort of his only option. So at a glance, he was like, whatever, they're a medical school that will take me. I'm going to go. So he leaves. He goes to Puerto Rico and arrives there. And then he realizes, oh, shit. All of my schools are being taught. All of my classes are being taught in Spanish.
Shit.
I do not speak Spanish. So that's a big problem.
Hola. Did he get there? And they're like, oh, hola. And he's just like, ah, oh, shit.
So, I mean, at the even if he did speak Spanish, wouldn't have gotten the best education. So now he's in a place where he's not getting a great education. And the limited education that he's getting isn't even in his language. I mean, this guy is really setting himself up here for a not awesome outcome.
Al abdomino is...
Damn it! Hurtful abdomino?
I don't know. I was making up the word for abdomen. I don't know. I was trying...
Spoiler alert. Devin also does not speak Spanish.
I do not speak Spanish. I am not trying to offend anyone.
No.
I was just trying to be goofy.
She's just
not
being
offensive.
Silly.
I have never spoken Spanish in my life.
Spanish is a really hard language to learn, I feel like.
I can do French.
I took Spanish and French in high school and middle school, and I just... Oof. Languages, man.
Ouvre la porte.
Open the door.
Thank
See,
you.
I know that one.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the typical MD program is about 4 years long. And that's like what the standard is, at least in the United States. Mm-hmm. So they'll do 2 years of pretty much exclusively classroom study. And you're spending all your time in classes and learning all the basic shit. Mm-hmm. The final 2 years are your clinical student time. So that's almost exclusively out of the classroom and on like in clinical yep. rotations. Yep. So that's what most programs look like in the United States. So still, and so in the spring of 1985, 27-year-old Anthony seemed to think that he was done with school. It's actually not clear whether or not he graduated. We actually don't know that for sure.
Can he even read his diploma?
We don't even know.
Does it say pass or fail?
We don't even know. We don't know because there's no like physical records available yeah. from this school. So we don't even really, it's never really confirmed that he even graduated. So I don't even know what his grades were. I don't know what his clinical experience was. He seemed to think he was done with it. And so he just
though
kind of.
Though he couldn't speak the language.
So he. He was like, you know what? I just need to get into a residency program. That's where I'm going to do all my learning. So he leaves the school and he goes back to the States saying, somebody will take me. I'm Anthony Pignataro. I have connections. Somebody will take me yeah. for a residency program.
They didn't take you for med school, but
yeah.
sure.
He's like, at least I'll speak the language. If I go back to the United States, at least I can speak some English with my patients.
He is raising the bar real high.
He is
here.
Really, this
is
something.
Set so high.
I actually can't believe this happened. Like, in the 1980s. I mean, I guess I feel like it was so recent that it's like wild that he fell through the cracks like this. Am I crazy?
I don't know.
I guess not. I mean, things are a lot stricter now. And obviously there's right. computers and databases and you've got to and everybody checks everything now because yeah. nobody trusts anybody. But I just feel like this was kind of recent for this epic failure to happen.
Right.
You know, so it's kind of wild. So after 7 years in a long distance relationship, he was still seeing Debbie this entire time. They just maintained their relationship. And Anthony finally left his school to start his life with her in the States. And the two ended up getting married on June 15th in 1985 in a Catholic church. They had like 350 guests. It was this big, extravagant, opulent wedding.
Come on.
But again, for Anthony, it's a status thing, right? Like, he wanted his wedding to be like the social event of the season.
You know what I feel about status?
I would love to know what you feel about status.
YouTubers.
Okay, here we go.
That's how I feel about status.
She flipped off the camera.
I think it's just a crock of shit.
I know, status is stupid. Life seemed to only be on the up and up after his wedding because his father was able to pull some strings and get him a residency.
Boom. Thanks, Daddy.
At St. Agnes Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, this hospital is a satellite hospital of Johns Hopkins. So it belonged to the Johns Hopkins system, which is an incredibly prestigious hospital system. But the facility itself was not entirely run by that company.
It had its own staff.
It had its own staff, its own thing. It was just an affiliated, it's a satellite affiliation.
So therefore, I'm sure down the line you're telling me Johns Hopkins says that they do not own any responsibility.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
However, Anthony told everybody that would listen to him that he was a physician and he worked at Johns Hopkins.
I mean, I would.
Of course he would. Because it made him appear more successful in conversation. He could say, I work at Johns Hopkins. It's like, bro, no, you don't. That just kind of speaks to the type of guy he was, though. Yeah. That's the type of guy he was. He was very self-inflammatory.
He's going to John.
100%. Going to the John. So, you know, and he always needed to feel important. This was very much like how he was as a person. And it wasn't until Debbie's like first summer officially as his wife. This was like eight years or so into their relationship where she started to kind of understand that that's the type of person that he was. So that summer, Anthony is constantly complaining about his problems. He's making rude remarks to people around him. He's demonstrating this like lack of basic respect for others. He just like, it turns out that this time apart that they had the whole first 7 years of their relationship was like long distance and they didn't spend a ton of time together, honestly. So now that they're married, they're living together. He's, you know, back home. They're settled in Maryland. He's got this new residency. And she's like, this guy is kind of unpleasant to be around.
No shit. This guy's kind of a dick.
My husband is somewhat gross. I do not love this.
He's an arrogant snob.
He's an arrogant, gross bastard. So Anthony, though, according to him, everybody else is the problem. Everybody else is the problem. Nobody could take a joke. Everyone's so easily offended. I'm just like so cool and up here and cerebral and everybody else is just like little peons down like here. And then anytime he got defensive about like his attitude, it was like everybody else has a shitty attitude. Like it's everybody else is the problem. Yeah. You know,
it's not me.
Never him. Everybody else. And
not
then
the problem.
And this, you know, kind of exploded into his personal life, too. And we're going to get into that. He was really interested initially in OBGYN as a specialty, but the residency that his dad had gotten him was in general surgery. And he was all for it. Like, this was okay with him. His dad was a general surgeon, so he was kind of like, it actually is nice that I'm following in my dad's footsteps
a little.
If
I'm getting you these gigs, you're going to do what I tell you.
And yeah, I think that was part of it. Like, I want you to follow in my footsteps. I'm your father. You will be a surgeon like me. So he's in his residency. He's doing okay. The learning curve was pretty steep for him, again, because his actual like studies were pretty limited and he didn't even understand any of them because he didn't speak the right language. So he was on call as it started during his residency. He would do on call rotations every third night. So he would have two nights off and then the third night he would have to be on call. So when he was home, he was sleeping or studying. And that was pretty much his schedule. So his schedule is very grueling, which is typical for a residency, right? So Debbie is at home. She really doesn't have much access to her husband, like in general. In April of 1987, she gave birth to a baby boy and they named him Ralph after Anthony's father. But what should have been like a joyous moment for the couple was soon tainted as Anthony's attention seemed to drift even further from his family. And on one occasion, at least one occasion, when Debbie answered their home phone, a woman had been calling, asking for Anthony. And there were other times that she would pick up the phone that like the phone would be ringing and she would pick it up and somebody would like hang up. And so Debbie was like, maybe this is like a patient that's like pursuing him, or either that or he's having an affair. It's like one of the two. But then Debbie found a cassette recording in her back seat.
I love that it's a cassette recording.
I know. And I'm kind of like, but why? So on it was a tape. Literally, it was audio of Anthony flirting with another woman. And it was clear that from whatever it was that was said, that these two had like an intimate relationship.
It was an 80s sex tape.
It was a 1987 sex tape. Sexette. This is going off the rails. We are off the rails. So I don't ask me why this cassette was just hanging around in the backseat of a car. Like, what is it? I don't know. But she found it. It was there. Mm-hmm. And she was pretty heartbroken. She confronted him about it immediately. She threatened to leave. She said, I'm going to take the baby and I'm going to go. And in response, Anthony called Debbie's father and told him Debbie was about to walk out on him. And Debbie's dad gave the couple one piece of advice. He said, forgive him. Give him one chance. This is his one chance. Forgive him. And Debbie took his advice and she said, you know what? Fine. This is your one chance. This is the one time you get to do this to me. If you do it again, fuck you.
Do you think Debbie regrets that decision?
Oh, probably. So right now, it's been 2 years at St. Agnes, right? And he's been doing his rotation at this point. And he planned to return to the residency a third year, but his contract, unfortunately, was not renewed, which means you need to find placement for the completing the rest of your residency essentially elsewhere. It's not clear if, you know, he wasn't considered for a third year there because they didn't have staffing or because his performance was poor or his attitude sucked. We don't actually know. Either way, he was not invited back for a third year. So he had to make other accommodations. And
he thought he was kind of a dick.
Yeah. Well, he probably was kind of a dick, and maybe they found an excuse to be like, this guy's out.
Yeah.
So Anthony was really angry about this. He was really pissed. He actually even thought about getting legal counsel and like suing the hospital, because it does kind of screw you over when that happens, because a lot of programs, like most people stay in their programs until they're done with their residency and then they can take their board certification test and that's at the end of that.
Even have a chance though? I mean, he went to a medical school that he didn't speak the language.
I can't even believe he got a residency in the first place. Daddy he only got it because residency. Daddy got him the residency. It's wild. It's not unique for a doctor to not get called back into a residency. It's not like something that's unheard of. But for him, it was just an atrocity. Another way for the world to just shit all over him, because he's like a classic narcissist and he thinks everybody's out to get him. Everybody's against him. Everybody has a shitty attitude. I'm the best and blah, blah, blah. So he leaves the Baltimore area kind of like feeling very shameful about the whole situation. He and Debbie end up moving back to the Buffalo area, and they start living with Anthony's parents for a while he figured out, what the hell am I going to do? So he looks around a little bit, and soon Anthony does get a job at a walk-in emergency care center without having completed his actual general surgery residency. So it's a far cry from the prestigious Johns Hopkins adjacent residency, and I think having that name tied to your residency probably really did boost him for employment a little bit. And maybe this urgent care center was like a kind of like, we really need staff type of situation, and this guy's got an MD.
We got a Johns
MD
Hopkins
with a pulse
here.
Yes, sir. So but the fact of the matter was, Anthony really barely had the competency for any
do you
position.
See the surprise on my face?
No. And while at that job, Anthony treated a patient who presented with severe inflammation of the heart lining, also known as bacterial endocarditis. But he did the whole workup. He was seeing the patient and he missed it. He did not diagnose it. And failure to diagnose a condition like that can be deadly, like very deadly. Bacterial endocarditis, it's something that can start with like sort of vague symptoms, fever, malaise, sometimes chest pain, shortness of breath, and it can mimic less serious conditions, but it's one of those can't miss things. It's one of those things like somebody comes in with like some chest pain and shortness of breath, you're immediately looking at the heart and the lungs to make sure that you're ruling out the serious stuff before you consider that this could be something less life-threatening. So generally speaking, if someone's coming in experiencing like a pretty fulminant case of that, you know, you're having chest pain, you have a fever and chills, you're septic, you have shortness of breath, Like you're, and it can destroy like the lining of your heart and the structures within your heart and make you need like heart valve replacement surgery and things like that. It can be very, very life-threatening. And anybody with this clinical presentation, that should have been like immediately at the forefront of his mind. And it was, according to his colleagues, like who had reviewed the case after the fact, like pretty shocking that he did not consider this as a possibility. Like very shocking, given the patient's presentation, their history, everything. So because he missed it, the patient never received appropriate treatment and they died. He killed him. So listen, and we've all missed shit. I've missed things. I've been wrong. We all are wrong. But there are some things that are subtle that can mimic other things. And it's like, there are things that happen to everybody. And then there are things that really should never happen to anybody. Right?
Right.
And this was one of those clinical scenarios. I don't have the exact details laid out in front of me. But everybody who sort of reviewed this case afterwards was like, this was a blatant failure. This was a huge failure. Like, this guy has no business in an emergency setting at all. So that's really sad that that happened. And soon after this, Anthony was hit with a wrongful death suit. The suit did get dropped because he was very lucky and he had a really, really, really good lawyer. So he got very fortunate.
Paid for it by daddy?
Probably. And given his past arrogance, you know, he might have overlooked his errors and chalking it up to his, you know, his own involvement in like as like a sad coincidence. He kind of like never took it to heart that this was his fault. Of course, it was everybody. It was the world against him. You know what I mean? Like he just had that attitude. So he had no accountability for what happened. And he had, you know, this lack of concern for others that expanded that was in his personal life that was starting to expand now into his professional life. So in June of 1988, his wife gave birth to their second child, and doctors revealed, sadly, that their new baby had a major brain tumor. And she would spend her life in a vegetative state.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, like catastrophic.
That's awful.
Catastrophic situation. So they made the very difficult decision to remove her from life support, and she died shortly after. And during this period where he is grieving, and I do not feign to know what it's like to lose a child, you know, that is the saddest and hardest thing I could ever imagine an adult human being going through. So everybody grieves differently. And I, you know, don't have any right way and checklist of things that you need to do when
you're
grieving.
So we're not judging, but I'm sure you're about to tell me that
he was acting interesting. He was. And it was more of like a, he didn't have an interest in addressing the pain. And this, I don't think is uncommon, but he did not really seem to address or deal with the loss in a healthy way at all. Instead, he found and accepted a brand new residency program that started the following month at Georgetown University in D.C. And he was very fortunate to get that.
How did he find that?
I think he got really lucky and probably his dad knew some people and pushed some buttons and pulled some strings. So he advised Debbie, hang back in Buffalo with your son while you get while I get situated in, you know, our turf. And then I'll bring you guys down once I get like the training under my belt and all of that. And he seemed to think that coping with their loss might be easier if they kind of start anew somewhere else. And like, I get that sentiment a little bit, you know. And so Anthony moves down there. And then 1 month later, Debbie joins Anthony down there with their son. And their marriage had deteriorated a little bit, which is typical in the setting of a loss of a child. It was reported that Anthony often like berated Debbie. He would say things like, look at yourself in the mirror. Like, do you think I want to be with somebody who looks like that? And he became very critical of her appearance.
I hate this guy.
I kind of like disliked him before, but then like when I was reading about this, I was like, Jesus, this guy fucking sucks.
You suck. Hey, Kate, guess what?
What?
I am super comfortable right now.
Same.
Oh, you want to know why?
Yep, I do.
Because I'm in my comfort clothes.
Oh my God, me too. I love comfort.
The holidays are right around the corner.
Literally
five minutes away.
Like, I hear that little Mariah Carey, hi.
She's unthawing. It's that time of year. We're all looking to restock on some winter cool weather stuff.
Yep.
Don't forget to beef up your cozy weather wardrobe, too.
Yeah, buddy. If you're like me and you're in your cozy girl era, because that is where I live. Comfort is nice because it has options for the whole family. They have men's clothes, they have women's clothes, they have kids, and even furry friends.
The dog! You know, ever since you told me about Comfort and I've been exploring in it, I never want to get out of these clothes.
I wash all of my Comfort stuff on constant rotation because I get pissed if I have to sleep in anything else or wear a different sweatshirt.
My favorite part is that they're very size inclusive.
Their matching sets come in this variety of weights, the variety of colors. Every single thing that I have gotten has been so high quality.
I love the colors.
Oh,
I'm
me
currently
too.
I'm currently in a mix of the dark, warm green fall color mm-hmm. with some light blue pastel.
Like, yes.
I am a season mix right
now. You literally are. I am in the Comfort Pastel Edit, the light pink color in the crew neck sweatshirt, and it is one of my favorites. I wear it all the time. And it's hard to describe, but I have a lot of sweatshirts, okay? Don't at me. But since I've been wearing Comfort, I always reach for these first. Because they're so soft, they're so comfortable, but they have enough structure that it feels like you're getting a warm hug when you put it on. You know what I mean?
Who doesn't like warm hugs?
Olaf likes warm hugs, and so do I.
Sure as hell does. But I'm really thinking about getting the Comfort weighted blanket.
Oh my God, I know. We gotta get some from the Pod Lab, dude.
So not only do they have the clothes, but they have the luxurious blanket as well.
They really do.
And I don't know about any of you, but I love a good weighted blanket.
My next one is going to be the Travel Essentials hoodie because it has a built-in eye mask. And like, what? You heard me right. There is a built-in eye mask on this bad boy. They have all of the colors. The quality is so high, and it holds up really well over time. I've washed these things, like I said, on constant rotation.
That's my favorite. I hate when my favorite stuff starts to pill.
Yes. These don't do that. Nope. These do not do that. They're so functional. They are loaded with pockets, which I love. I got to have a pocket. You know what I mean? So everything is like not only so comfortable, but so functional, you know,
absolutely.
And makes things so easy. And the prices are honestly super affordable, and they're actually having a sale right now. So, yep, GTFO. Get over there.
Get over there.
Get over there.
So if you want to check out and get your own Comfort stuff right before the holiday season, check out www.comfort, that's comfrt.com/medcrimes, and get 15% off your purchase.
That is www.comfort.com, comfrt.com/medcrimes for 15% off of your purchase.
Go and get snuggly.
Woo!
Do it.
So Debbie was having a really hard time, like, knowing what to do. She even tried, like, bettering herself for Anthony. Like, she was dieting. She was exercising. And she's like, I would lose weight. I would change my hair. I would do all these things. And he would find something else to shit on me about. So it was like she would fix something, she would improve herself, she would start doing all these things, and he would still be dissatisfied with her in some stupid way. Like, this guy's something else. And shortly after starting his residency at Georgetown, Anthony decided he didn't want to be a general surgeon anymore.
Okay.
So that's just, you know, okay. So whatever.
He can berate his wife, shit on himself, and he can just quit.
Yeah, he can just quit, do what he wanted. So what he wanted to pursue instead was otolaryngology, which is the medicine of like ear, nose, and throat. Yeah. This is a pretty major pivot in the medical world.
Well,
I mean, these are very, very different specialties. Yeah. Very different. Yeah. So it was kind of inconvenient, like in timing, too. Like, first of all, he had just gotten this like really good residency that he was very fortunate to get.
Correct.
And he had already spent, this is like his third year that he's invested into general surgery. And also, his family.
Do you think he keeps hopping around when, like, eyes are on him?
Yeah, probably.
Speculation.
When there's, like,
you've
something.
You've been here for a while. You don't know this?
It like could very well be that there was, like, an issue that people were asking yeah. questions for, or that he was having crappy outcomes and people were starting to hold him accountable.
For
and
sure.
He's like, fuck this. I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised at all if that was part of it. So Anthony had spent over a decade of his life in education and training, and he started his undergraduate in 76, med school in 83. Now in 87, all he had to do was All he had to show for it, essentially, at the end of all this was that he like had a half-completed residency program. That was it. And he still had no privileges to...
He had one job!
He still had no board certification as a full-fledged attending physician after all of that. Still, he was undeterred from chasing his new specialty, even though it required him to switch his focus yet again. And changing specialties at this point is doable, but it is definitely a sacrifice. So like most doctors that are in training, they don't do this. This is not
right,
a common thing
to
do.
You get to a certain point and you don't want to have to start over.
It is a huge time, energy, money, study, investment to do a residency program. And if you're just going to switch to something else, it's like that entire program is a waste because you got to start from scratch, right? So otolaryngology residencies are actually very long. They usually require a minimum of five years in residency. Wow. That's a pretty good chunk of time. Some subspecialties might only require like 3 or 4, but in general, it's going to be 5 years anyway. So he's now just committed himself to another 5 years of education and training.
If I was his wife, I'd be pissed.
Same. I'm like, I thought you were going to be like a full surgeon next year. What the fuck is going on? Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, we have a young family. Mm-hmm. Come on, stop. Like, so ENT medicine is pretty complex. And people who are not in the specialty don't always think of it that way and don't always appreciate it. But the relationship between the ear, nose, and throat is actually very complex.
Yeah.
It is very much its own specialty. You can fill up a whole doctor brain with only ear, nose, and throat stuff. And that is what they do. And that is what they love because it is very specific. So it would have taken Anthony a lot more time, and he might have been better off in the long run since he likely doubted his choice to become a general surgeon. Maybe that was just too much for him. I don't know. And maybe he felt like he needed just like a smaller focus of medicine, like a small, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he became really passionate about it and kind of hyperfixated on it initially. He was like really excited about it. The facial anatomy was really fascinating to him, and he endorses like having that interest, like even in medical school. He's like, actually, all that has always been really interesting to me. So it came kind of naturally to him. And unfortunately, the change in focus did little to help with Anthony's luck with his education because his staff and colleagues at Georgetown did not like him. According to some of his coworkers, they felt like Anthony was conceited. He was only out for himself. And for example, on New Year's Eve in 1988, 30-year-old Anthony had ER duties but chose to walk out in the middle of his shift so that he could go get drunk with his friends at a bar.
This guy is just so upstanding.
So, like, again, zero account. Like, he's got no personal accountability whatsoever. He's got no sense of responsibility because he's had everything handed to him on a fucking platter, right? So, by stroke of luck, Georgetown did not drop Anthony after this. I don't know how he didn't get like fired for just like walking out with no notice, but for somehow the gods of Georgetown residency were like, you know what? You can stay on. You get that one chance too. And then the months that followed, he would complain to his wife more and more and more about his dissatisfaction with the program. And Debbie figured she'd let Anthony vent and do what she could to support him. She really just wanted him to be done with school.
Yeah.
She's like, I will listen to as much bitching as you want me to if it means you will fucking complete something in your life. Mm-hmm. So all she want, and their goal was for him to complete training so they could move back to Buffalo. And she really missed her family. Like, her whole family was from the Buffalo area. And she's like, I just want to go home. Like, complete your residency, do what you got to do. Take me back to Buffalo so that we can go there and settle there and live there. Take me back to fucking Buffalo. So that is not exactly how things panned out. And during his second year at Georgetown, Anthony decided to transfer to yet another program. This one at Thomas Jefferson.
Like, number five?
This is the third residency program. And this one was at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia. And since he didn't finish at Georgetown, he'd have to do at least another 2 years at this facility. And by that point, it's hard to imagine that Anthony's failures weren't weighing on his self-esteem, but it doesn't even seem like it affected him at all. He was just like, whatever, I'm just going to jump around from program to program. See, this is what I have problems with. I cannot believe this happened as late as like 1990.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like this is so recent to have been allowed to happen.
I mean, now and everything, there's like medical boards and all this stuff, and like they get reported. So I don't know what year the medical boards like were made and all that stuff. So I would think late 80s, 90s, we'd have that.
Right.
Where you like have to like keep track of your physicians and where they are and what mm-hmm. they're doing. But
yeah, exactly. So I don't know how Anthony ended up justifying this with Debbie, this third pivot into a whole nother residency program, but he did. He talked her into it. And in June of 1990, they picked up and they headed up north to pursue this third fucking residency program. By that point, Debbie had given birth to their daughter, Lauren. She was perfectly healthy, and she, you know, it took a toll on Debbie having the first baby, first of all, after a catastrophic loss mm-hmm. of your second baby, and in the midst of everything that's going mm-hmm. on with her husband, mm-hmm. all this training, all these moves, and she's now got two kids to parent instead of one. So, yet again, Anthony's struggles were dominating their lives. Like, he's just really struggling to just exist in this mode of life. So he thought he'd be content with his pivot to his new program, and it turned out that the residency at Thomas Jefferson posed similar challenges to Georgetown's, which is that nobody fucking likes him. He cannot make friends anywhere he goes because he's an abrasive asshole.
He has not gotten the clue.
No, he has not gotten the memo that he needs to just be nice and easy to work with and responsible.
And work hard and try. Educate yourself.
And be a fucking adult for once in your life. You can't just keep doing this and expect to have a doctorship handed to you and to do a good job. So amid these recurring social troubles, Anthony never stopped to consider that perhaps he was the problem. No. No, it's everybody else in the world. He is never the problem. So instead, he just claimed that everybody envied him because he's from such a distinguished program, which you hadn't finished one of those fucking distinguished programs, asshole. Don't even with me. During Anthony's first year at Thomas Jefferson, he left nearly everyone there with a bad impression of his, not only like his personality, but like his medical knowledge. Everybody was like, dude, you like, not only are you an asshole, but you suck.
You're dumb.
Like, you suck at this. What have you been doing this whole time? In his residency evaluation in June of 1991, doctors had to score him on a scale of 1 to 5, which is like pretty typical in all of like their skill things. Typically, successful residents get at least 4s in all of their categories, and Anthony scored between 1 and 2.5 across the board.
I was going to go with a half a point.
0.5? Anybody? So among the qualitative analyses, one physician stated that Anthony was a medical sociopath.
We hadn't heard that one before.
I like this guy because he does not mince
words.
You
are a medical sociopath.
He at least tells it like it is. So it seems plausible that this guy wasn't just using the term medical sociopath to exaggerate the situation. Maybe he had actually thought genuinely that Anthony was suffering from like antisocial personality disorder. And honestly, that doesn't seem unusual for like his presentation. He at the very least is like a textbook narcissist mm-hmm. at the very least. Luckily for Anthony, residency evaluators hold very little over actual doctors after they get their certification. However, they could impact employment opportunities in circumstances.
I would hope so.
So nevertheless, regardless of Anthony's mental health.
Not his circumstance.
Nope, not his. He was not making good impressions wherever he went. And all of his cohort, like his co-workers, like his other residents in his program, had all similar concerns. And one fellow resident even warned that Anthony should not be rehired, including, quote, "I fear that lives are truly at stake." This suggests that rudeness was not Anthony's only problem. As he tried to work his way into the medical field, it was just his lack of knowledge. Like, his knowledge was always in question throughout all of these programs. So it was no surprise when 33-year-old Anthony Pignataro was not invited back for the second-year residency program. So this is the second program now that has said, you can't even finish your residency here.
Yeah.
There's just no way. In 6 years, this is his third residency program.
This is terrible.
It's so bad.
I feel like we're in Groundhog Day.
This is so bad, right? Far worse, board certification exams for an initial specialty must be taken no more than 7 years after a successful completion of medical school. So this is almost nullifying medical school. Because he's getting too far away at this point
for that to even count.
He might have to repeat medical school. To take on another residency would push him way past that time limit. So he's like fucked a little bit. So essentially, Anthony was now ineligible to take exams under the American Board of Otolaryngology. And this would, I mean, completely obliterate his odds of getting hired pretty much everywhere. Like, there's no, you can't, without a board certification, 9 times out of 10, Not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. So he could go back to a different medical school and try to qualify again in the future. But Anthony had lost his patience by this point. He's like, I can't.
He didn't have any to begin with.
No. He told his wife, I am done with residency. So they were too confining. And they just want me to fit in this little, you know, mold and this little box.
I'm too big for that.
And I'm too good for that. I don't want to conform to their whims. It's like, dude, it's just conforming to fucking science. And medicine as a whole and what works.
I hate this dude.
This is so bad. It's so bad. The way Anthony saw it, he had garnered enough experience across all the three programs and he should just be awarded a board certification just for that. Even though he hadn't finished any of them, it was time they head back to West Seneca. So they picked up and they moved back to West Seneca, which is Buffalo, New York. And some
They're quite different. Distance apart, but it's the 100%. Buffalo, New York area.
I know it.
Anyone who's been on that highway.
Yes, it is. It is the area.
Miles to there Buffalo.
So many miles, yes. In the summer of 1991, 33-year-old Dr. Anthony Pignataro and his wife Debbie moved back to West Seneca, New York with their two children. He'd spent 6 unsuccessful years at this point at 3 separate residencies.
Failing.
And the last one, again, had not invited him back, leaving him with this major hurdle into his plans becoming an ENT doctor, basically. And he still could not take the board exam. So without that certification, getting hired was going to be like next to impossible. And it's not required to practice medicine, to clarify. It is not required that you have a board certification in your field of interest in order to practice medicine from a legal standpoint. 9 times out of 10, hospitals are quite discriminatory against people that don't have it.
So did he start his own little practice?
So
did I just jump ahead?
No.
I was going to say, because if he could be his own boss and he doesn't give a shit if he's board certified.
Just because a doctor isn't board certified, they're always required to become board certified to successfully complete residency programs and go into practice. However, it is an important veneer for employment at major hospitals. And Anthony would absolutely have obviously a tough time finding work without that credential, but that did not stop him from finding a loophole.
Oh.
And in his mind, working at a hospital was the only way to build up a solid client base. And if he couldn't get privileges on his own, he'd work for somebody who could. And for Anthony, that person was an elderly physician recovering from a coronary bypass. The well-known doctor needed Anthony's help 2 or 3 days a week, assisting him with appointments. So because of their work together, because of his affiliation with this guy, Anthony was able to get privileges and credentials through the hospital that they were affiliated with.
All because of this guy that he basically used.
So in 1992, Wyoming County Community Hospital granted Anthony access to their facility and privileges to practice as a physician. To be clear, he was practicing as an assistant, but he'd be allowed to treat patients within the facility. That's what that was outlined in his credentials.
So he's acting as a physician's assistant.
Pretty well, mostly, kind of, but like a physician, basically.
Yeah.
So he somehow, although it's not clear how he did this, he somehow also managed to weasel his way into work at a second hospital also, Our Lady of Victory, which is where he'd have the chance to actually perform surgeries down the line.
Shit.
This was a pretty significant responsibility for Anthony to be trusted with, and the hospital may have felt a little leery about his lack of board certification. However, being board certified, again, can sometimes be viewed by hospitals as secondary to basic competency, and this would have been more likely at a smaller hospital, you know, less likely to happen, something like this to happen these days, but could have definitely been something that could have happened back in the 90s. Whatever the case, Anthony managed to gain the trust of a handful of very important medical professionals, but he could not really keep up that facade for long. Eventually, like, his lack of medical knowledge kind of caught up with him. In February of 1993, a 34-year-old Anthony operated on a 71-year-old patient at Our Lady of Victory, and the goal was to extract a laryngeal tumor for biopsy. And the surgery required him to operate deep in the throat. Fortunately, this can sometimes cause complications regarding airflow and airway compromise and bleeding issues, especially if there's a lot of swelling that occurs and the area tends to swell very easily and very quickly. So it can be kind of dicey if you don't know exactly what you're doing.
A little bit.
Uh-huh. So it's very important to account for these complications that can happen during a procedure this deep in the throat, in this part of the throat. He would have needed to ensure that the patient's breathing wouldn't be obstructed. He would have also needed to consider any potential bleeding issues that could interfere with oxygenation. And so all, you know, very high level stuff that Anthony is not necessarily qualified to manage at this point.
Not at all.
So he didn't account for the lack of oxygen or swelling, and the patient died during a very, what should have been a pretty routine procedure. So naturally, the hospital was very alarmed at this terrible outcome from a relatively simple procedure. And they very quickly restricted him from performing any airway-related procedures after 1 p.m.
Stop it. What? What? You get tired. You need a nap.
It's because at 1 o'clock, all the really cool people are, like, done for the day, and they've like, gone home. And you got to have, like, the really competent people in the building when you're doing
that shit.
I'm like, Our Lady of Victory, what are you doing? So from the hours of 7 a.m.
to 1 p.m.,
he is allowed to obstruct people's airways because people will come and pull his ass out of the fire. I just don't get it. I don't get it. And it seems like every time a bad outcome happened, he just kind of like shrugged it off. He was like, fuck me. I guess I'll just do better next time.
Sorry.
Sorry.
And Charlie.
He still maintained his access to hospitals. And finally, though, in September 1993, when his initial contract with Our Lady of Victory expired, they did not renew his privileges because of his bad outcomes. So, again, he's just like, whatever, I'm just going to keep being me because it's the world against me. Everyone's just trying to screw me over. He still had privileges and access to the other hospital.
So it's like a note being passed around. Screw this guy.
Pretty much. Screw this guy. Everyone's
getting the message.
Exactly. And pretty soon, though, Anthony screwed up at this original hospital, too. While operating on a 30-year-old man's deviated septum in August 1994, Anthony nicked the outer layer of the brain and caused a CSF leak into the patient's nasal passages. And such a huge mistake posed a high risk of meningitis, nerve damage, and brain abscess. So this was a big concern for the hospital, too. This is another pretty routine surgery that went just horribly wrong. Anthony finished the procedure and said nothing, even though he knew during the procedure that he nicked the membrane and there was obvious CSF leaking into the surgery field.
Oh, my God.
So he just, luckily, the patient survived. I mean,
wow.
It was complicated, but the patient survived. But the issue quickly reached an ENT specialist at the hospital who questioned whether Anthony had the credentials to do the procedure in the first place. He's like, what is going on? Who is this guy? So the next day, Wyoming County Community Hospital canceled his privileges, too. Yet another blow. And it seemed like the rejections were just coming and coming and coming. But Anthony's not the problem.
No.
Anthony's never the problem.
There's no mirror here to look into.
No. And around this time, the elderly physician he had been assisting seemed to seek Anthony's help less and less. So Anthony applied for work in both otolaryngology and plastic surgery at two facilities in New York. Neither one of them hired him. And he couldn't prove that he'd been board certified in either specialty, which is another little bit of red tape that he has to get through. But to get around that, Anthony appealed to the American Board of Cosmetic Surgery and Facial Cosmetic Surgery asking for their certification. He just fucking wrote a letter. He was like, hey.
Can I have this?
Hi. Can I get one of those?
Charge.
How much do you charge for a board certification? Where's the add to cart button?
Check out now.
Check out. Apple Pay. Check out. Add to cart. So if Anthony wasn't the experienced ENT doctor he claimed to be at this point, it shouldn't have been hard for him to get. Yet a facial cosmetic surgeon is often trained in ENT who had then completed their ENT residency and then done additional resident time in plastics, and that would give them that like subspecialty. Mm-hmm. But the board required an otolaryngology diploma, which he again did not have.
Don't got that.
So at the start of 1995, he turned to face an old enemy, which was the Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia, his last residency program. And Anthony seemed to believe that one of the chairmen might have actually sabotaged him. And so in a maneuver to gain eligibility for the exams, Anthony sued the residency program. This was like a last ditch effort to just like shit all over them and make it like they screwed him over. So he hoped to prove in court that he was qualified and had been misjudged by those overseeing his advancement. And to make his case, Anthony selected a physician he thought would treat him favorably to write a report. And well, his name was actually not released in any of this court stuff. But this physician, so his part in Anthony's investigation was that he'd interview various specialists who worked with Anthony during the program, and then he'd write up a conclusion. But Anthony's plan backfired because this doctor's statement painted him as a lazy liar who didn't respond to correction. He didn't respond to feedback. He would routinely show up late. He'd leave early. He claimed he had done work that he hadn't done. He said he had seen intensive care unit patients he hadn't seen. He fabricated laboratory data. He fabricated physical exam data. He made up, like, all of this shit.
Was anything for people. Real?
I don't know if anything was real. And then he would get shitty feedback, and he would just say, well, fuck you then.
Mm-hmm.
You know? He would not accept any sort of feedback whatsoever. Like, this physician who did the review was like, this man is not cut out to be in medicine. Like, this guy, no, mm-hmm. is the answer to mm-hmm. that question. Instead, he deemed the report unusable for his defense, and he dropped the suit, obviously, because he wasn't gonna win the suit. So now, it's spring of 1995. Anthony had to find a different way to prove his legitimacy as an ENT to the Board of Cosmetic Surgery and Facial Cosmetic Surgery, because in his mind, he's qualified. He's like, I have the qualifications. They're all up in here. So he just did not have a residency diploma. So he faked one. It said he'd completed an ENT residency at Thomas Jefferson University, dated October 31st, 1991. Happy Halloween, bitches.
Thomas Jefferson? Like, I don't...
Like, the Thomas Jefferson?
Maybe.
Yeah, Thomas maybe.
Thomas Jefferson University?
Even
shit.
I know, right? Even if Anthony had completed that residency, he would not have finished it that soon. He would still be in the program, because it's a long program. So this was a blatant fraud.
Liar!
But evidently the board did not like follow up and nobody did any checking because this fucking thing checked out. Piece of paper checked out. So they fell for his trick. They permitted him to take they said, OK, you have the certificate. You can absolutely take the exam. And in April 1995, he passed the board exam and this secured Anthony the accreditation.
He passed it?
I know. I was as shocked
what?
As you are. You study for like, anything and you can fucking
it?
Pass it. Remember that movie Catch Me If You Can? Do you remember that movie?
I never watched it.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leo, yeah.
It's about Frank Abagnale. And he faked being a lawyer. He never went to law school. And they always asked him, how did you pass the bar exam? You passed the bar exam. How did you do it? Mm-hmm. Did you cheat? What did you do? He said, no, I did not cheat. I studied for 2 weeks and I passed that fucking test. You study for anything long enough, you can fucking pass it, even if you don't apply it in your day-to-day. So with that, he finally had his fucking board certification, right?
That is insane.
This secured Anthony the accreditation he needed to start offering plastic surgery services. And
now he's going to go anywhere.
He can open his private practice. That's what he wanted to do. So Anthony just needed a new way to get his name out there to willing patients. And as luck would have it, Anthony had just the gimmick to get people talking. And it was an idea that had sprung from his own sort of insecurities and personal issues. And Anthony had been losing his own hair since his mid-20s. So now he's 37, and he had been wearing toupees on the day-to-day, but they never really stayed on. He just hated it. He hated being bald. Simply snap onto the skull. He wouldn't have to worry about it falling off in public. And he could make a product. Like, he could patent this product. Like, a toupee that could just, like, have implanted, like, snaps. They could just snap on.
They didn't have that yet.
No. And so he felt like if I could somehow make myself the first patient, could I patent this? Could I try this and patent it? He asked his dad for a drill. And what he wanted to do was drill several holes in the top of his head and put these little
burr holes on himself.
He literally did this.
He did burr himself too.
He did this. He drilled the holes into his skull bone. He placed bolts in there, and like the bolts would only come up like just slightly above the scalp for the hairpiece to snap into. You're like feeling your head.
I'm doing this.
I'm doing the same thing. We both have our hands on our heads. So this is like, it sounds like crazy, right? And like kind of outlandish, but weirdly enough, it actually healed. It actually worked. And he wore a snap-on hairpiece in public and it went well. I swear to God. And the Associated Press wrote a fucking article about this guy because of this. His lucky break. I'm in the fucking news. For something positive. This was like the one win. The snap-on hairpiece. Pretty soon, Anthony made appearances on a variety of shows, including CBS Nightly News, Maury Povich. Maury! Oh, my boy Maury.
Oh my God. I gotta look.
So he demonstrated his hair implant device on all of these shows, and everybody was just absolutely floored by this new innovation. Clients came, money started rolling in, and his practice is getting busier and busier and busier. And soon he's not relying on, you know, these corny little radio ads and stuff. You know, people were seeking him out because of all this notoriety. And his new patients never seemed to question his ability. And if Anthony didn't have a big enough head before, his media attention had inflated it even more aggressively. Now it's 1996. He's 38 years old. He's driving a red Lambo. He's sending expensive gifts to an exotic dancer that he was dating for a while. He has got his little snap-on wig, and it's not flying off in the Lambo because it snaps into place.
That shit's tight.
And he was finally successful. This was like his moment in the sun. Like, he loved this success. Or so it appeared. But even if he looked the part, he didn't exactly fit the role of the successful doctor. And Anthony's rich guy persona could not make up for the fact that he contributed to the deaths of two patients thus far. At least that's what we know of. His lack of experience and training would soon rear its ugly head again. And according to the Buffalo News, one morning in August 1997, 39-year-old Terry Lamotti headed into Anthony's private practice for a liposuction procedure.
Oh, shit.
Shortly after, she was brought down to the basement operating room of Dr. Anthony Pignataro's practice. She had had four pregnancies before, and she wanted to feel confident in her body again. I mean, that's something we can all understand. And her new husband, actually, she had just gotten married, had actually given her a gift certificate for liposuction at Dr. Pignataro's practice, which is kind of a shitty gift. Okay. I mean, if she asked for it, sure. If that's what she's voicing, but don't do that if your wife isn't asking for it, though. That's a little rude. I'm just throwing that out
there. Here's your sign.
I'm just throwing that out there. At the time, Dr. Pignataro had these big promotional ads circulating, and it's possible that the procedure was even, like, at a little bit of a discount, you know? He was offering, you know, whatever discount.
30% off? To lose 30%?
Can you imagine? My God. So she had her consultation, and Terry trusted Dr. Pignataro. He was charming. He was super charismatic, you know? And she was going to follow through with the surgery. And so she knew it would take a little time to heal, but she really looked forward to the final results. So she was like, he gave her a handful of pills to swallow, which is like the pre-anesthesia meds. And so she swallows these pills. And soon after that, her eyelids get kind of heavy. And an assistant comes over and guides her to the surgery center. The surgery center, quote unquote, is down two flights of stairs. And she kind of recalls, she's like, I mean, my memory's fuzzy because I had taken some meds, but this literally was a basement with a medical reclining chair and a small, like, Mayo stand table of tools. Like, it literally looked like this basement. Like, this basement that we're in right now with, like, a medical reclining chair. It was, I shit you not, a basement. I cannot stress the word basement enough. This is a basement. So it's unlikely that this was, like, up to OR code, like, from a sanitation standpoint. And, you know, the stakes are kind of high with, like, abdominal liposuction Because if you're getting liposuction in the abdomen, what it is like there's like a wand, right? And you feed the wand under the skin into the fat layer of the tissue, and you're sucking out material from the fat layer. And if you angle things wrong, you can just shove that thing right through the muscle wall and into the peritoneum. And I mean, that is a huge risk for abdominal liposuction. So the fact that he was performing something like abdominal liposuction in a fucking chair in a basement is pretty horrifying. Yeah. Like, this is not without risk. I mean, all surgical procedures have risk. This one has that particular risk. Uh-huh. So, you know, you could puncture a major organ. You know, it's not a good scenario. So she had already been sedated. So she had seen this, but couldn't really act on it, right? Because she was already, like basically falling asleep on her feet, right? So the world around is slipping away. She's directed to the chair. And the last thing she feels before she's unconscious is that she's like moaning a little bit. She wakes up at 5 o'clock that evening, and Terry was fully dressed. Like, they had assisted her to getting dressed. They got her into the car, and her husband drove her home, but she did not feel right. She's like, I noticed that when I got home, like, they had put dressings on me where they had done the punctures, but there was blood saturating these areas, and it was pouring down my legs.
Oh my God. So she's hemorrhaging.
Like, literally hemorrhaging. So she lifts up her shirt, and she sees, so there's like several like little puncture marks that should be present when you're doing abdominal liposuction. She sees 18 to 22 staples across her stomach.
What the fuck?
And surgical incisions that were open and had not even been closed.
What?
There were just open punctures that are just gaping and bleeding all over her. And so she calls Dr. Pignataro. And he said, oh, that's just like the extra surgery fluid. We use a lot of fluid during the surgery that's like dwelling in your abdomen between all the layers. It will leak out. It will seep out. That is normal. That is a normal thing that you're seeing. She's like, I'm bleeding down my legs.
Come on.
Okay.
Come on.
So she somehow goes to bed feeling a little bit reassured.
Did she?
I mean, why would she not?
Did she her feel doctor's reassured?
Like, she talked to her doctor. She's supposed to be able to trust this guy. He's supposed to be a physician, and he's like renowned, nationally renowned for his plastic surgery at this point. So she wakes up in excruciating pain. She's like, this is getting worse. Why is this getting worse? This should not be getting worse. This should be getting better. What is going on?
She was butchered.
And she is still seeping blood through her clothes. Like, she's bleeding through her clothes onto her sheets. So she gets a family member. She's like, take me to the ER.
This is what I meant by juicy.
Yeah, I know. She's like, I don't know what this is. Get me to the fucking hospital right now. So doctors start taking things apart and looking at her. And they're like, what in the fuck is going on? And they did some imaging, and they found that her intestine had been perforated.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. She was now suffering from a severe peritoneal infection from a perforated intestine.
Gosh.
So the staples were placed poorly such that they were cutting off blood supply to bits of her abdominal wall. Also, she was stapled so horribly wrong. The number of staples, first of all, 18 to 2 staples across her abdomen is very excessive and very strange given the procedure. Usually it requires literally that fat sucking cannula with like a couple of puncture marks. So what the fuck happened down there? We don't know. I mean, that is an absolute butcher job, whatever happened down there. The wounds were very significant. It is inexcusable that they were that big. Is it inexcusable that they were left, that some of them were left gaping open, and then others were stapled so tight shut that they were cutting off blood supply to her abdominal wall.
Freaking word.
She was mutilated. Like, mutilated. Yeah. So this suggests
and
that...
And on death's doornail with...
Yeah, literally. Yeah. So she had to be admitted. She needed surgery to correct all of that. And she was committed to like weeks of IV antibiotics.
That's insane.
She could have died.
Percent.
Very lucky that she listened to her instinct and not her surgeon. And she went and sought medical attention because she knew something was wrong. She is so fucking lucky. If she hadn't gotten to the hospital when she did, she would have died. Mm-hmm. Anthony didn't seem to think so. Days after the surgery, Terry is in the hospital recovering from her botched job. And one night at 2:30 in the morning, something woke her. at the hospital.
Stop it.
It was Dr. fucking Pignataro.
No, it was not.
He had no medical reason to be in that hospital. He did not have credentials at this facility. He came and fucking saw her at 2:30 in the morning. 2:30 in the morning.
What?
It is unclear how he even knew Terry was there, because nobody had contacted him. Nobody had told him that she was there. Somehow he talked his way into the hospital and starts fucking flipping through her chart. He says, I'm her surgeon. I'm flipping through a chart. And he starts screaming at her. He says, go home. Everything here is normal. You have no reason to be here. I want to shake this man and be like, she has fucking peritonitis because of you.
Please tell me somebody stepped in.
Luckily, the nurse is on duty because nurses,
we fucking
for the win, fucking quickly intervened and got Anthony the fuck out of the room.
And she was probably like, no, get away from me.
Yeah, she remained in her hospital bed and she was shaking. She was shaking. She was so mad and freaked out.
This guy just butchered you. Yeah. So you're like, get the fuck out of here.
She does not know how lucky she is. She was so lucky. She would not be Dr. Pignataro's last victim that summer. And the next one does not even make it out alive.
Is that in part two?
Yep. Till next time,
oh
baby.
Oh, my God.
Isn't this... Ah, I just want
to... I don't think I've been this emotional over an episode in quite some time.
Oh, dude, this is a crazy one.
This guy's
one.
A fucktard.
This one sucks. This man is the worst of the worst. He's the worstest.
On that note, thanks for listening, everyone. You can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can search for us on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you want to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast. Do not be like this guy.
Don't. You can also, I'm going to add in here, you should leave us a review on Apple.
Yeah.
Because we're at 399.
Oh, who wants to be the big 400?
Come on.
Fuck yeah, 00. Love you guys.
Send us your crazy stories, ideas, suggestions, anything you want to say at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there. Please, please just like check and make sure that your surgeon is like actually board certified by like, you know,
the board,
a board or something.
And not an ironing board.
And maybe that's who certified Dr. Anthony Pignataro. An ironing board, a diving board, a Pinterest board, something that was not a governing board of medicine.
Not at all.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye then.